Hello, this is Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. We'll start our reading today, as we usually do, on the front page of the paper. Today, with the article, New Partnership, Council Okays Casino Partner Site, by Jennifer Bailey. The Danville City Council Tuesday night approved a new casino operating partner, new casino site, and new concept plans to present as part of a new application to the Illinois Gaming Board. Aldermen heard a casino presentation by Danville Development LLC, which is the Wilmot family with Wilmorite Construction, a commercial real estate development and management company in Rochester, New York. Jimmy Wilmot, vice president of gaming with Millurite, said they've chosen a new location for the casino, 204 Eastgate Drive, which is the former Morris Flamingo site. That building is owned by Shaheen and Company and was once proposed for a cannabis cultivation center. The site is on the north side of Interstate 74 and west side of Lynch Road. There are sewer capacity issues on the north side of the interstate along that corridor, which Wilmorite will pay for the city's $600,000 portion to address. The former Morris Flamingo warehouse and distribution site has a total of 110,663 square feet on 11.54 acres. Wilmorite is proposing constructing a new connection, crossroad between Eastgate Drive and Lynch Road at the front of the parcel. The gaming floor would be about 17,000 square feet. There also would be a steakhouse, food court, and 570 parking spaces. Phase 2 expansion would be 15,000 square feet, and by phase 3 it would have a 100-room hotel, additional restaurants, and a banquet and conference center. Construction on phase 1 of the proposed casino could start in spring of 2021 and be completed by the end of 2021. It would include 500 slot machines and 10 gaming tables, including a craps table. If it all comes together successfully, it could be completed in about 6 years, Wilmot said. Wilmot said by the time they break ground, they'll spend around $30 million, and by the time they open, the investment would be about $100 million. The new proposed casino site still needs zoning approval. The Illinois Gaming Board's next regular scheduled meeting is September 17th. Last month, IGB approved Haven Gaming's withdrawal for its casino owner's license application. Danville has 120 days to select its new applicant and for the chosen applicant to apply to the board. IGB officials said the original application didn't include sufficient information and didn't comply with state statutes. Some aldermen asked why they should trust Wilmorite. Wilmot said they'll be the sole owner, construction manager, and operator. Former State Representative Lou Lang was present again for this casino presentation, as he was last year. He said Danville is having a second chance with this new casino application to start over, and Wilmorite has already been vetted in other states for casinos. He said Wilmorite has accountable leadership and will build what they promise from start to finish. Wilmot said they only take on one to two projects a year, and with the Danville project, this is where we will really be concentrated for the next 2 years. He said they also have taken into account the Terre Haute Casino and COVID-19. They've also agreed to community financial benefits, and Wilmot said they appreciate the belief the city has in them. A 42-acre site in the Southgate Industrial Park was initially approved by the city for a casino site. The site was south of Interstate 74 at the Lynch Road exit. That proposed casino was proposed to have up to 2,000 slot machines, 40 gaming tables, and additional amenities. We'll next go to the article, DACC to Consider VP Appointment, by Carol Rome, Danville. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees is expected to appoint Natalie Page as Vice President of Academic Affairs at its meeting Thursday night. Page, Dean of Academic Services at South Suburban College, will start in her new role as DACC's Chief Academic Officer around September 14th. Her contract will run through June 30th of 2021 at an annual salary of $120,000. The faculty and staff all wanted her, DACC President Stephen Nako said. She just dazzled us. She understands accreditation, and she has programs in mind, like a casino certification program, he said. She also will be involved with student outcomes. She's the future of academics at DACC, he added. Page will replace Executive Vice President of Instruction and Student Services, Dave Keatsman, who retired at the end of June after 50 years with the college. Kathy Sturgeon, who has been Dean of Math, Science, and Health Professions since 2011, served as Interim Vice President of Academic Affairs since July 1st. Page has worked for more than 4 years as the Dean of Academic Services at South Suburban College in South Holland. Her prior experience at South Suburban included 6 years as a tenured faculty member in communications. This followed similar full-time faculty roles at Lewis University in Romeoville and Kennesaw State University in Georgia. Earlier this year, Page completed her doctorate in community college leadership from Northern Illinois University. Her dissertation focused on improving the success rate of students from underrepresented groups. She also has a master's degree from Governors State University in instructional design and technology. Her bachelor's degree from Michigan State University is in advertising and marketing. As the Vice President of Academic Affairs at DACC, Page will lead a team that includes 4 academic divisions, as well as online learning, assessment, and the Hoopston Higher Learning Center. Also on Thursday, the trustees will hear a financial update, hear the president's report, consider placing the tentative fiscal year 2021 budget on display for 30 days, and set the time, date, and place of the public hearing on the proposed budget for 5:30 p.m. on September 24th, in the Vermilion Hall Room at 302 at DACC. It's a balanced budget, and it relies on some assumption that the state revenue won't be at 100%, Nako said. There are conservative numbers in the budget. This year's proposed operating budget was $17.16 million, an increase of about 0.3% compared to last year's budget of $17.1 million. With an expected increase of more than $100,000 in operating and state formula equalization grants, as well as increases in local property taxes as a result of increasing equalized assessed valuation, the college will be able to move forward by investing in human resources to maintain quality student service, provide training needed to meet the employment demands of the community, provide training needed for assessment of student learning outcomes, cover software increases for certain programs, and add new student mobile app software. Depending on the fluctuation in the equalized assessed valuation, the tax levy rate is anticipated to be approximately 60.86 cents. The current rate is 61.15 cents. They will also consider approving the $2.5 million Capital Development Board project to renovate the circa 1900 clock tower and ornamental horticulture buildings. The state has authorized the project and will help manage it, Nako said. Part of the clock tower center was remodeled in the last few years, and approximately 32,500 square feet remains to be remodeled. The vast majority of the 32,500 square feet is classrooms and instructor offices. Computer labs need to be rewired. The telecom, data, electrical, plumbing, and fire protection needs to be rehabilitated. The heating and ventilation mechanical units are a continual problem and need to be replaced to improve the learning working environment. The ornamental horticulture building was built in 1969 and has never been rehabilitated. Due to the generosity of Julius Hegler, The greenhouse was replaced in 2011 with a new 6,200 square foot facility. A few more items need to be added to make the greenhouse a state-of-the-art educational facility. DACC's cost to fund this project is estimated at $755,267, which will come from board-restricted facility reconstruction and renovation reserve funds. We'll go now to the final article on the front page of the paper, and that is District 118 to Consider Refinancing Plan by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville District 118 school board members tonight will consider a plan to refinance the district's debt. Because of the current low interest rates, the district could realize a cost savings of $2.4 million over the remaining 10 years of a 2011 bond it sold to fund renovations of North Ridge Middle, Southview Upper Elementary, and Mark Denman Elementary Schools. The board will consider issuing general obligation bonds not to exceed $10.5 million for the purpose of refunding the district's outstanding bonds from 2011 and levying an annual tax sufficient to pay the principal and interest on them. We will sell the bonds to lower the interest on the bonds we already have, Superintendent Alicia Geddes explained. We're refinancing the bonds that will give us a lower interest rate, which will allow us to lower the district's tax rate for our community. If approved by the board, the refinancing plan will lower the district's tax rate by 0.2 cents per $100 EAV. The bond and interest rate would decline to 0.65 from 0.85 from the 2020 levy, which is payable in 2021. Geddes said tax relief is only one part of an comprehensive approach the district is trying to take to meet the community needs during the COVID-19 pandemic. During the COVID-19 challenge, we're working to find other ways to serve the community, she said. We waived registration fees and are providing most of the school supplies for our families, Geddes said. For homeowners, we're trying to lower the tax rate and give homeowners savings. The district is also rethinking the way we distribute food, she added. One plan being considered is sending groups of district support staff by bus to deliver foods to students' homes. We also plan to have lots of tutoring available for all of our students and want to make the learning day more flexible, she said. Nothing has been finalized, Geddes added. These are just the ideas we're working on. Also tonight, the board will review a proposed spending plan for the 2020-2021 school year and decide whether to display it publicly for the next 30 days. The tentative budget shows $80.9 million in expenditures for the year, which is about $800,000 more than last year, and $74.9 million in revenue, which is about $1 million less in revenue than the year before. We were very conservative with the revenue we thought we might get from the state, Geddes said about developing the proposed budget. They will also consider approving a bid of $159,127 from Presidio of Peoria to upgrade the district's phone system. The upgrade will allow staff to use their work phone from their laptop regardless of where they are. Because the teachers are using their own phones, we have to find a way for them to be able to use their district phone, Geddes said. The district purchased its existing phone system in 2007. We'll now go to the death notices. Geralyn Jerry Arnett, 92, of Danville, passed away on Saturday, August 15th. A private family service will be at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Geralyn's name to a charity of your choice. Martha Jane Pichon Millican, 94, of Emporia, Kansas, formerly of Danville, passed away on August 12th. A private family celebration of life service will be held at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial donations may be made to Buck Animal Welfare Fund in Emporia, Kansas. Otham E. Tony Johnson Jr., 86, of Danville, passed away on August 14th. A service to celebrate the life of Otham E. Tony Johnson Jr. will be held at 3 p.m. on Thursday, August 20th, at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the service on Thursday. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. Lula Mae Powell, 93, of Tilton, passed away on Monday, August 17th. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, August 21st, at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Private family services will take place at a later time, with burial at Atherton Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Lula's name to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Dale F. Smith of Oakwood passed away on August 15th. A private family service will be held at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center on Friday, August 21st. A celebration of life will follow at 30 Penny Lane in Oakwood at 5 p.m. so that friends may join the family. Memorials may be made to the Collison Masonic Lodge. Sandra Sandy Lee Sherman, 72, of Georgetown, passed away on August 15th. A celebration of Sandy's life will be held privately by her family. She will be laid to rest in Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. Heading now to the local section, we'll go to the article Governor Candidate to Visit Covington, a staff report, Covington, Indiana. The public is invited to attend a question and answer session with Libertarian Donald Rainwater, who is seeking election for governor of Indiana. He is running on a joint ticket with candidate for Lieutenant Governor William Henry. The meet and greet event will be at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday at the Bicentennial Gazebo on the Fountain County Square. Social distancing will be implemented. Rainwater is an advocate for reduction of government overreach and empowering rights and liberties of the individual. He is a lifelong Hoosier, having served 8 years in the Navy, and has worked in software engineering and information technology for the past 20 years. His campaign platform pledges to reduce taxes for Indiana residents. Rainwater's plan for Indiana includes reducing or eliminating regulations and licensing that stifle the growth of small business, and ending the economic disaster due to mismanagement of the COVID-19 pandemic under the direction of Governor Holcomb. I believe that our current economic crisis in Indiana requires bold action to restore stability to the nearly 1 million Hoosiers who were forced into unemployment since March 13, 2020. A significant element of that action, in my opinion, is to reduce the tax burden on individual Hoosiers, their households, and all of the Hoosier small businesses whose owners file their business income on their individual tax returns, he said in a news release. Rainwater has signed and submitted the Taxpayer Protection Pledge, which states that he will oppose and veto any attempts to increase taxes in Indiana. This pledge is promoted and monitored by Americans for Tax Reform, he said. Not only will I oppose and veto new taxes or increases to existing taxes, but I will diligently work to eliminate the individual state income tax and the personal property tax on primary residents in the state of Indiana, he said. Event details at Explore Covington on Facebook. For a bit more news out of Covington, we'll go to the article Covington to Launch Girls Soccer Program, another staff report, Covington, Indiana. The Covington Community School Corporation School Board heard Monday from Athletic Director Trent McCormick, who reviewed a plan for the launch of a girls' soccer program. McCormick recommended and introduced Margie Lockhart as the first coach of the Covington Trojans girls' soccer program. "Ms. Lockhart has a strong background in coaching soccer," McCormick said. "She will begin her duties in 2021 and will have the distinction of being our first coach." McCormick said he has scheduled 3 junior varsity matches for the fall. On behalf of the student athletes, McCormick thanked Derek Holycross, girls' soccer parent organization representative, for his efforts in helping make the program possible. Holy Cross thanked the board, McCormick, and coach Ryan Sowers for their support, while informing them of a donation from Fountain Trust Bank, which will be used to fund and launch the program over the next 3 years. The donation is in the amount of $14,000 for each year, 2020, 2021, and 2022. We are so very grateful for the support of Fountain Trust, Board President Carolyn Lloyd said. Next, for some state news, we'll go to the article Statewide Rolling Positivity Rate Ticks Upward by Jerry Nowick at the Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Cases of novel coronavirus disease continue to climb in Illinois, along with the positivity rate among tests conducted. The rolling 7-day average positivity rate has climbed by 1/10 of a percentage point per day over the past 3 days, sitting at 4.3% as of Tuesday. That number was driven upward by a 1-day positivity rate of 5.1% Tuesday, the highest 1-day statistic since June 5th. There were 1,740 new confirmed cases of the virus reported Tuesday, among 34,175 tests completed over the previous 24 hours. The Illinois Department of Public Health also announced an additional 26 virus-related deaths over the previous 24 hours, bringing the total number of fatalities since the pandemic began to 7,782. There have been 209,594 confirmed cases of the virus thus far among the more than 3.4 million tests completed. 2 days after Governor J.B. Pritzker announced increased restrictions in Region 4 of the state's mitigation plan, the Metro East area remains the only region of 11 that has warranted such a state action. As of Saturday, August 15th, Region 4's rolling positivity rate was 9.5% and had increased for 9 of the past 10 days. Southern Illinois' Region 5 had a positivity rate of 7.2%, which was the next highest, followed by Region 7 in Kankakee and Will counties, and 6.7% in West Central Illinois' Region 3, and 6.2% in suburban Cook County. All other regions ranged from 2.2% in East Central Illinois' Region 6 to 5.7% in North Central Illinois' Region 2, which includes Peoria and several surrounding counties. Hospitalization numbers continue to show a sustained increase from their pandemic lows, remaining at more than 1,500 COVID-19 patients hospitalized for the seventh straight day, after dipping below 1,400 in mid-July. At the end of Monday, there were 1,510 COVID-positive individuals hospitalized, including 335 in intensive care unit beds and 128 on ventilators. The Vermilion County Health Department confirmed Tuesday one new virus case, a resident in their 90s, bringing the county to a total of 264 positive cases and 16,176 negative tests. The new positive case today is related to a positive case from Monday. Now for some sports news, we'll go to the article Changing the Game: Covington Breaks In New Coach Style by Greg Flint, Covington, Indiana. It is a season of change for the Covington High School football team this fall, and not just because of the COVID-19 precautions that all teams are facing. The Trojans graduated 16 seniors from last year's squad, so this team will be young and inexperienced in some positions. The head coach has also changed, with Travis Brown stepping down and Tyler Campbell coming in to replace him. Campbell has coaching experience in high school, college, and the XFL, and has taken the opportunity to learn at every level in which he worked. Asked for a general overview of his plans for the team, Campbell said he wants to use speed and quickness on both sides of the ball, while keeping the game plan simple enough that the inexperienced players will have no problems. Defensively, the team will have continuity in defensive coordinator Scott Myers, whose read and react philosophy matches Campbell's own thoughts. "We want to put the best people where they can do us the most good, and then attack the ball," he explained. "We want to be up-tempo as much as possible." Campbell says he feels he can do that on both sides of the ball because he intends to play as many people as possible. "We're trying to develop as many players as we can so that we can stay fresh," he said. "We already have about 16 starters, meaning only a few have to be two-way players. We want to have as many going one way as possible." Looking at the defense more closely, Campbell says the line should be one of the strengths of the team. "Two of the three are one-way players, so they should stay fresh and on the outside of our defensive ends, are long and quick. Our front six should be solid," he continued. "Our linebackers are quick with sideline-to-sideline speed. Our defensive backs are athletic, and that should help them overcome their inexperience." Turning to the offense, Campbell says the team will pass more than usual in the WRC, as the game plan will be inspired by Hal Mumm's air raid offense, a style of play that spreads the field with multiple receivers. "We have speed and athleticism and want to use it," he stated. All good offenses start with a solid line, and Campbell said that portion of his team is just that. "This is a group we're going to lean on this year," he explained. "They are the most experienced part of the team. An offensive line coach, Doug Hunter, has them doing some unique things in pass protection. Running backs and ends will see the ball often for the Trojans this fall, as Campbell wants to spread the ball around as much as possible. All five skill guys should be able to use their speed," he explained. "And then the quarterback is a bonus. Special teams will get attention under Campbell, but not as much as at some schools. We find, looking at the numbers, that between 19 and 20% of the game is special teams," he stated. "We're going to work on them, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on them. We've got other areas that need work more right now." Overall, in describing special teams, Campbell says he has a kicker, a punter, and a group of returners who can hold on to the ball. Asked if he had anything that he wanted the fans to know about the upcoming season, Campbell reiterated an earlier point. "It's important to get as many players on the field as we can throughout the game," he said. "People should expect us to do that, and as much as possible, to stay fresh and be able to attack." With the time we have left, let's stop by the community briefs section. In Danville, housing group meets. The Danville Housing Authority will meet at 4 p.m. on Thursday via teleconference. Public comments must be emailed to jacqueline.vinson@hacd-hud.com before 3 p.m. Thursday. Agenda items include comments on the retirement of Lon Henderson as commissioner, floor stripping projects at Mayor Che Manor and Churchill Towers, property discussion, and department reports. The next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on September 17th at 4 p.m. at the Fair Oaks Administration Building Boardroom at 1607 Climb and Rain. Also, County Board Panels. Vermilion County Board's Health and Education Committee will meet at 5 p.m. on Thursday at the Vermilion County Administration Building on the second floor at 201 North Vermilion Street. The panel will discuss the Health Department's solid waste budget and the Department of Animal Regulations' budget and other matters. The Vermilion County Public Safety Committee, scheduled for today, has been canceled. That's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. Thanks for joining me.